The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And it's a great pleasure of mine in this episode 228 to introduce you to Adam Navarro-Lowry, who is a longtime listener of Colombia Calling. And he's down here in Colombia. Now, I wouldn't ordinarily have, like, let's say, a listener on unless you've got a story to tell, but Adam has a story to tell. But before I launch into that, how's it? I mean, let's talk a bit about life, Bogota, and so on. It rained again on me this week. I was out at the Radiohead concert. Did any of you catch that concert? Pretty phenomenal. Radiohead, first time in Colombia. I think they put on a good show for us, especially those of us, the non-commercial ones and the commercial ones. They played the hits. They played 26 songs. But then it rained on us. I got home sodden and everything. But perhaps that's the right kind of weather for Radiohead, you know? It kind of goes with some of the falsetto being sung by Tom York. But anyway, we're here with Adam. And Adam is, you know, of Colombian Irish descent, which makes me think of my book. The book I edited was Gabo, an Irishman, because we've long believed that Colombia and Ireland are long lost relatives. And Adam, there's a lot of things in common between the two countries, I think.
Absolutely.
Adam's on the show today because he's come for the first time, age 39, to Colombia. And that's pretty cool, you know, to come to Colombia and to trace family, to trace his roots. He was very close to his grandmother, who's the Colombian grandmother. And he's done a lot of, family research. We've got the file in front of us with birth certificates, licenses, photos from Barranquilla, passenger manifests, and so on from when the family, it looks like they fled Colombia at a certain period and then headed up to the U.S. I guess they were in Long Island, New York, then out to Ohio, Michigan, Detroit, Dearborn. I mean, could you think of more, let's say, the middle class, like survival in Michigan and that kind of area? But it's fascinating. But he's come down to explore, and we got in touch, and the story is great. So, Adam, let's say, welcome on Columbia Calling.
Oh, thanks. Thank you so much, Richard. It's great. Pleasure and honor to actually be here. First, I want to say, I've been an avid follower since I discovered your podcast, which would have been less than a year ago now. But it was an interesting story how this whole thing was prompted last August and kind of full on this self-discovery, you know, getting to know my Colombian heritage and roots. So,
well, it's important. But, yeah. It's,
and I want to say one more thing about the podcast that you have. It's really a little nervous, but just because I feel like I'm among a great cast of characters.
I know.
That you've had. Everyone's so fascinating. I really do get a lot. I'm learning. It's a very educational Something I've tried to get my girlfriend, my daughter, my mom to listen to as well, and friends, you know. So anyways, it's my favorite. It honestly is my favorite podcast. And if you make T-shirts, I'll be the first to
know. Right. Well, thank you. I know. I have planned. But thank you for that. Flattery will get you everywhere. Thank you. And it does, it, you know, it means a lot to me because it means, you know, that I'm doing something that, that means something. And that's important. Not just me just talking out into the ether. But Adam, so I mean, let's start. I mean, you were born in Toledo.
Well, I was born in Dearborn, Michigan, 1978.
Okay, so 39. I mean, you were born
outside Detroit.
Yeah, very close there, and all of this. If you've got pictures from Toledo, Ohio, and stuff. And this podcast is going to appeal to, let's say, my listeners out there who are looking for their Colombian roots, maybe adoptees, maybe others, maybe, you know, second, third generation, what have you. I mean, but you feel Colombian, and we met a week ago, and my wife had the opportunity to meet you, and she said, you know, in one light, he looks Irish, and then the light changes, and he looks Colombian, and you do, so you could switch between both. But so what brought on, I mean, well, let's talk about your first. I mean, you were a military policeman. You served in the army, in
Kosovo 2001.
Airborne.
I was in the 101st Airborne Division.
Wow.
From 2000 to 2003.
So you were in Kosovo. So yes. I mean, that's serious stuff.
Yeah, I was in Kosovo, a 6 month tour in 2001 during the operation. That would have been, well, obviously with K4, NATO, Task Force Falcon.
And you know, and I know there's stories, and we'll get into that, but you mean why you joined the military, but let's not get into that. But let's say, why age 39 did you decide to come to Colombia for the first time? Because Colombians are close to their family. I would have come earlier. I mean, there's these links.
Yes. So it's an interesting story, Richard, I think, and it's a unique one. Especially after listening, honestly, the only opportunity to listen to, besides the other Colombian Americans that I know personally, which, many adopted and met throughout, a lot of them college or just out and about that's in Michigan, or, you know, I've heard this story of the adoption, and then there's other Colombians that are kind of like me. They're just, you know, their family kind of came, and I've had Colombian, you know, friends that were connected to organized crime. I have friends that were not, but so very few, though, I gotta say, like your interview with Natalie Quintero, I remember that struck a chord, because it's like, oh, whenever we meet someone who's Colombian or Colombian descent, it's like, ooh, yay! You know, it's something, it's an instant connection that I've always been, you know, that I've had, been well aware of, as having, you know, a great grandmother, bisabuela, Josefina Chinchilla Navarro. She is the one who kind of chose me out of all the great grandkids and even her own kids to really kind of instill and teach. I mean, we were speaking conversational Spanish by the time I was 14 in front of the rest of the family at family gatherings. So, I would say, that was kind of having kind of a limited but yet enough exposure as a child, you know. To my culture, so it was really a big part. It was really, you know, it was really close with my great grandmother, really cariñoso.
You were elegido, as they say. You're the chosen one. You had this thing, but I mean, it's taken you a while to get down here. I mean, is it something about time, or something about the reputation of Colombia? Have your parents put you off coming?
It's a great question. So, actually, growing up, 80s and 90s, you were born in Michigan, Detroit area, going to, you know, so I was also half Northern Irish, Lama Lowry. It was kind of a thing, right? We were told to say we were Spanish growing up. By the time I was maybe 11 or 12, I started to figure out that, wait, something's not, I'm not getting the full story. And I was kind of aware of that. And I was a little, you know, I was always very inquisitive. I was the one who's asking questions. And I was, you know, I still to this day am a very, very close member to both. I'm kind of a interweaving, you know, trying to keep everybody in contact and in peace. But I think that I was just, the curiosity just burned about my cultures, both of them actually, but the Irish side, Northern Irish side, you know, was not a, there was nothing secret about it. There was no mystery. And that, but in the other, it's like, okay, when I was growing up, I like, it would, you know, be able to culturally connect with, these other lads, kids from like Mexican, like Mexican immigrants. There were lots of migrant workers that would come and that didn't speak English. I was playing with them early on, and they were, we were amigos early on. But you said, so socialized in a weird way, kind of in public school. But yeah, go ahead.
No, you said, so you said you were told to say to people you were Spanish to avoid saying you were Colombian. I guess it's the reputation of Colombia in the 80s, 90s wasn't obviously the most wonderful.
We were not permitted to watch television. We were, it was a strict order. We were not, we were allowed to watch like Errol Flynn movies prescribed by my grandmother, who was a teacher.
Errol Flynn.
Oh, yeah, a lot of old classic films and, you know, like, children's prescribed by my my grandma, who was like a teacher.
This was to protect you.
Yeah, we, so we never, I wasn't exposed to the news, like watching news growing up. My mother did write a letter to President Reagan and sent her a book, sent him a book about the Dr. Seuss, called The Butter Battle book. But so I always thought that was interesting, and he actually responded and wrote her a letter back, I remember.
Okay.
But she was saying, you know, so, you know, kind of putting this all into context, into perspective, the there was something that happened in Colombia where we were, our own family, they didn't really want to talk about it, especially on the Navarro side, I gather. But also, yes, in the news media, obviously, there was, you know, every, you'd walk out, I mean, but there was a point where I realized I was Colombian, maybe 12, 13, and I started... I'm Colombian and I'm American, or my family's from Colombia. When people say, "Oh, where's your ethnic descent?" or ask, you know, you know, the other, there was no Colombians for very few. So the first thing I remember getting after the response would be, you know, always, "Are your family drug dealers?"
Oh yeah, of course.
Do you know the Colombian neckties? To this day, I have not even, I don't even know if anybody, you don't hear it anymore, but like, who's, what is a Colombian? I don't even know. It's such a... So it was kind of like, he always had to... I've had a nickel for every time I heard that in my early teenage years. Yeah, there was...
It's one of those things.
You know?
I guess it's one of those struggles for an identity as well. And you know, I don't blame people. I'm sure my son will have to then deal with it later on in life, if he goes to England or the US or Canada or whatever. I don't blame people because I know nothing else. And that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to educate that there's a lot more to Colombia. And so you're getting this identity.
And on the flip side, Richard, being Northern Irish,
Protestant Northern Irish,
we weren't allowed to, we would go to the pubs, Irish American Gaelic. My father took me for my first pint in Michigan and Trumbull, and he's, first thing we walked in the door, he stops. It's, you know, you have the buzzer. It's an old school. You push the buzzer to go in. And it's like,
wow,
St. Patrick's Day. It's like, my dad takes me out, and yeah, the flip side is, you know, it's kind of like, oh, by the way, son, it pauses for right as we enter the door to this, you hear, you know, the fiddle in the Irish, you know,
music. The jig.
Like, what's going on in there? He says, don't talk religion in here.
So it was both Protestant and Catholic in the pub there in...
As long as you could... The rule growing up, I understood it, was you were a Catholic until you said you weren't. Until you were labeled by the IRA. I've had the IRA guys, throwbacks, like Guinness, drink after drink, whiskey, and they're like, telling you, oh, well, thank God, you know, thank God, Lowry, you're a Catholic. So I'm like, you just kind of like nod your head.
So this is difficult. You know, you've got Colombia on one side with the Escobar link, and then you're Northern Irish Protestant on the other side. So you've got, the only person I've met who's had worse is like, I think it's an Afghan Colombian. I think so. I think I've met some, I can't remember, it was like Yemeni Colombian. It's like, this is like the worst possible, but the most exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but let's draw this back a sec. Yep. You know, we're looking here at your family tree. You've done some serious work. You've done some serious work, and you've been able to trace your family with the Navarros probably to Santander. yeah. and the chinchillas to Tolima. So, yes. so not far from Bogota, I think yeah. 3.5 hours and stuff. And so since yeah. we've met, since yeah. we've talked, you've been down to visit, and yeah. and I won't. We'll take a break before we sure. launch into the sure. into the cool stuff. Yeah. But you, I mean, it's your first time, and it yeah. really didn't take a lot. I mean, you basically spoke to one person who said, "Well, yeah, yeah. there's people here. There's your family here." Yeah. But let's, before, we've got a minute or so before we go into a break. Mm-hmm. And there is a Colombia link to the reason why you joined the army. And let oh, yeah. you give me yeah. that, and because we don't need to dwell on this yeah. A lot, but it is yeah. a Colombia link, and this is Colombia Calling.
Yeah. Sure.
What is the reason behind you, yeah. you know, running to join the army in, I think it's 2000, what, 1999, 2000?
99, yeah, okay. I joined the army, and it was in by 2000. Uh-huh. Well, I, by the time I was 18, 19, I was really full on into exploring my Latin roots, my Colombian uh-huh. culture, and I was able to do so through universities, meeting other South Americans, uh-huh. and, well, actually all cultures, really, yeah. you know, like a multicultural situation. Where it's what I really took to dancing salsa music, mm-hmm. and I was dancing 6 nights a week in Detroit, and I was running, I was actually running around with the Colombian squad in Detroit, mm-hmm. you know, and so, you know, that was, I was welcomed as a, you know, Colombian full-on. And you know, to this, it was a very young. I was 19, getting into nightclubs, dancing salsa, where you know there were much. Everyone was much older. Mm-hmm. So you know, maybe a year or so into that, I also played soccer in a league in the southwest side of Detroit, in Clark Park. So it was there. Someone I knew who was a paisa, who was from Medellin. I never knew him to speak English. I had a kind of a night where it was very in Detroit, in the middle, in a house, just him and I, where I was invited. I thought there was going to be another big Colombian party. I was expecting, the usual thing, and it was just him and I, where essentially he sort of, it was a little bit of a recruiting session by the last man standing, the last capo, as far as I know, in the Pepes, the Medellin cartel.
What do they want you to do? I mean, what were they going to recruit you for?
It was a room full of, there were guns and drugs. Uh-huh. And you can see it's a little hard to kind of reflect, go back and remember, because he wanted me to, he was asking in so many words for me to recruiting me and to distribute for what I guess would have been was left of the Medellin cartel in Detroit.
Pretty terrifying. And Detroit, known for its, lawlessness in certain areas.
You have to know those. I have never had a problem in those streets, but this was a situation where I had to leaving that house, which I don't know if I should have left alive or not. It was the best seeing that sun the next day.
You went home, you got up the next day, you're like, I'm going to join the army.
Pretty much. It was like I was in such great fear that I signed up to join the army.
Hard stuff, this, as we wind down this first segment. Yeah. And let me just share with the listeners that Adam has not even shared that snippet of information with his family. You get this sort of idea, and I guess now you're out, you're doing your own things, you're working in publicity and filming and stuff. And you're wanting to look for more of your identity that's not that side of things. That's not that side of things. Yeah. And so we'll take a short break here on episode 228 of Colombia Calling, and we'll return with Adam Navarro-Lowry to talk about his findings. You know, he's traced his family. Let's not open the door too fast, because there's a lot to be told, and very interesting. And thank you for Adam for being so open and explaining the situation to us. And I think situations that many Colombians or people can associate with and relate with. Yeah. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall talking to Adam Navarro-Lowry. We'll take a short break on this episode 228. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling, episode 228. We're here with Adam Navarro-Lowry. We finished that first segment on quite a personal note. And so, you know, as I was, as you know, grateful for that. But this episode is more about identity. Adam was born in Michigan, lives in Chicago, works in Los Angeles, but he's tracing his family. And so we met a week ago here in Bogota at the Bourbon Coffee Roasters, which is a great place. I love it here. And we met and we talked about it. And my wife was like, no, you're going to find family. And I'm like, you're going to find family because you've got the family tree. You've got death dates. You've got birth dates. And these towns are small. So, you know, we're not tracing the Navarros, which are into Santander, but we are tracing. We were, you know, talking about Tolima. And of course, when you talk about Tolima, you're talking largely in this period of time. So we're looking at, 1862, 1870, 1880, turn of the century, that 19th, 20th. You're looking at Honda, which of course was a phenomenal port. You know, the three navigable, three ports when the Magdalena River were navigable, Cartagena, Mombos, and Honda. That was the highway. And of course, by Honda, not so far away, you've got the town of Ambalema, which is a big small colonial town, but a tobacco town, a port. Again, that's where the tobacco from Santander came into. Yeah. So there could be the link between the Navarros and the Chinchillas.
Yep.
Now, so Adam went down for an exploration.
Yeah.
Booked an Airbnb in Honda, probably the first ever Airbnb in Honda. And of course, the guy was so grateful, he decided to drive him around himself, his host. That's Columbia for you.
Yeah.
And he drove off to Ambalema, and I'm just going to say, Adam, you're up here.
Yeah.
You go to Ambalema and said your surname, and what happened?
Oh, God, it's amazing. I was there from Sunday until last night. Which, you know, today's Thursday. So,
yeah,
a couple, three, four days there. And wow, what a magical, surreal, magical surrealism. It was like totally something it's exceeded my anything I imagined.
Yeah.
It really, truly, but they're also, so it was a mixture of that surreal, magical surrealism. Like, what just happened? Did that really just happen? Okay, yeah, that just happened. And with like, oh my God, I'm just hugging, embracing a blood relative, connected by the Chinchilla bloodlines of, Ambalema. And like, it was a very an emotional, totally tears were shed.
Tears were bad.
It was kind of a... The whole experience in a nutshell was kind of like really hot too.
Yeah, well, Ambalema's hot, but thank God, God for the heat.
Yeah,
it's because Bogota is chilly all the time.
So day one.
Yeah.
Let's say
something. You did something off mic earlier, and we can.
So
you left Bogota and you were down on the bus, and as you woke up and you felt the temperature, you felt a belonging.
Oh yeah. So, I left Chicago last week and I was like it was a bit of a little nightmare situation leaving the cold city, cold, snowy city of Chicago, the kind of whole idea in my mind that I'm doing this first. So there was all this anxiety. I had to file my taxes, by the way.
Oh, yeah, don't talk about that.
Which is, we won't talk. So, right up until the next couple of... So I had left in I arrived to Bogota. I was, Bogota, it's another big city, even bigger than Chicago. So it's like, had really no problems, just kind of... But I was not feeling like really in touch yet, where I was looking for. I was still feeling... So things took a turn when meeting you and your wife. That was really a big part of this. And then hearing, what you're getting your advice on, so getting a little direction there. So, at first it was kind of like a little anxiety driven, but I got on the bus to Honda Tolima.
Yeah.
And things started to kind of chill out at that point. And then about, kind of a crazy ride out of the, it's like, People say, it wasn't that bad. Actually, bus rides were not that bad.
Okay.
People were telling me, you better watch it, you're going to vomit.
No.
I'd say maybe, there was a couple moments of like car sickness, but not to that point. And I fell asleep. And it's, 4 hours to get to Honda.
Mm.
So it gets dark. And I woke up out of my little nap. And when I was waking up, I was having this feeling, this sense of peace and tranquility. It was coming from within, but I was looking, seeing with my eyes the valley where the Rio Magdalena is, that valley. With the rolling hills and montañas, el sol, the sunset, the rayas, it was something poetic, but yet something like I felt a part of.
Yeah. And
so, you know what I mean?
There was a connection.
Yeah.
Which is almost, wonderful. To have never been
to a place.
It's hard
to put in words,
but to know. And you got to, when we got to Ambalema, it's beautiful, which I have yet to visit. Of course, it's on my list. Mm. There's too many places in Colombia.
Yeah.
Your Airbnb guy drove you there.
Yes. So my Airbnb was actually, so I have records from Onda and Ambalema. They're both towns. Now,
they're very much related, these towns.
They very much are. They're right on the river Magdalena. Onda is old colonial, 400-year-old streets. Las calles de las trampas. El mercado, que no me acuerdo cómo se llama, pero it's really old.
Yeah.
And in Michigan, we have Detroit, Chicago is a young city.
Yeah.
But where I grew up, we have 300-year-old streets.
Yeah.
And from the French, I grew up around that colonial history, and Fort, Michilimackinac and Mackinac Island and things like that, which is kind of like reminding the buildings are that old, the embattlements, forts. So it was really old, and I just kind of walked the streets immediately, checked in my Airbnb, got in there, and just changed immediately at the end of the night out. Didn't care. It was a strange. I just needed to feel, walk the streets. So I did that. Went to a soccer match. Talked to some guys from Cartagena that were working, and they kind of filled me in on this and the local where the the local this places are. And I was like, okay, cool. And then the next morning though is where I really began to. That would have been Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where, I woke up and hit the streets again, and came across by the calle de las trampas, the Casa Navarro.
Yeah, and that's got to be family. I mean, there's only one thing of to it. Did you find any of the history of the Casa Navarro yet, or?
So there's a little, the Casa Navarro says it right on there.
Yeah,
holy smokes, got the picture to prove it. It's there.
Yeah.
And I immediately went to this herbalist.
Yeah.
Open. It's a big structure. It's a big old building. And I asked la señora adentro en la tienda. Se llama Flor. Her name is Flor, and in Spanish, buenos días, ¿cómo está usted? Buenos días,
how's the family?
¿Cómo está? Sí, yo soy Navarro, soy de los Estados Unidos, estoy buscando mi familia aquí, Navarro. ¿Conoces? Aquí dice para arriba, vuelta, Casa Navarro. And she went on to tell me that, your family's bien caballero. She just went on like, you come from a great family here. And she was telling me exactly where Mr. Navarro lives. Mm-hmm. And so they escorted me to La Casa de Navarro. They were actually live moments.
And you knocked on the door. Later. You knocked on the door and then said, I'm a Navarro.
Una señorita, she me acompañó. She knocked on the door and the lady who answered the window, Patricia Navarro,
that's it.
And next thing we're in there and we're
hugging,
sitting down with the books, hugging.
Yeah.
As it turns out, she's her husband is Bernardo Navarro, who's there. He is the great grandson of the Senor Bernardo Navarro, who was constructed the El Puente Navarro.
Okay, and this relation to you would have been...
Well, we're still trying, because there's tres ramas, three lines there, so we're still trying to narrow it down, but it went through my bisabuelo Luis Navarro, and the Navarro line that was somewhere either Honda or between Honda and Santander.
Now tell me about Amber Lema, because I love this thing about this. Is this photo here from Amber Lema, this family?
This is, yes.
So now we're looking at, you know, Adam's got some photos of his relatives, but there's one of these really old I guess sort of photograph sketch type things that you've clearly taken in Amber Lema.
Yes.
You've placed the photo of your great-grandmother there, right?
Or all the chichilla ladies were...
This is a stern-looking family.
Yes.
So we worked out that these were direct relatives to your great-grandmother?
Yes. These are somehow... We haven't seen that we're still doing... We have to, go back and look at documents to figure out exactly how. Just on paper, which they claim, but we have the photographs and we have the memories and the stories enough to, as you can see, it's just kind of like somebody's, we think that my bisabuela Martiano Chinchilla is probably the brother of Aurelio. I think his name is Aurelio. And there's, you see there are pictures, we all holding it up. Those are today's chinchillas. The chinchilla family still lives. It's huge, and they live on this block, so maybe two little blocks in the colonial town of Amber Lema.
Yeah,
and you know, there's one woman. That's Marta, I think. Mm. So there's several women and men that the old ones. I'm sitting next to them, and I'm looking at especially Manuela. If you scroll, continue to scroll. There she is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's blind now.
Yeah.
When she spoke, the way she, la manera que habla, her lips, her even her eyes, her nose, her ears, her spirit is like, I am sitting next to, this feels like almost I'm sitting right next to my bisabuela. Like in that photo, right? Yes.
Well, I'm looking at these two photos. Yeah. One is on your phone, and one is obviously an old school photo.
Yeah, and
there are remarkable similarities. Yeah. So this is a wonderful photo of Manuela in a rocking chair with the sunglasses on, which is blind, you say.
Yes,
and you're holding up a picture of
yourself. That's 6 years as well, blind.
Yeah, and you know, that's remarkable. For me, you know, I'm a genealogist. I'm just looking at photos. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And of course, you felt this.
Yeah.
And so you came prepared, though. You came prepared. You brought them gifts.
Oh, I did. I didn't know. I also brought lots. Yeah, I overstuffed my bag with a bunch of shampoo and jabon and all sorts of shampoos and little regalitos also.
Yeah.
I was thinking in case of Venezuelan kids, actually. Yeah. I didn't know how much with that. I really was following that too, and I was like, if I need to, I was bringing gifts for the people
any
who need
gifts is always appreciated.
I ended up giving all of it to my family there, and I had this Celtic, this crystal cross made from Galway that I gave to Manuela. So obviously she lied 6 years ago. I thought that she should have it. I gave her a Tiffany pin with it was from a military heat with a peace and symbol. I gave her thing. I just, this is what I was taught, and by my chinchilla, she would always have little regalitos. So I knew it was a custom. In the case that we did finally get to meet my family, I would have regalitos.
Yeah, you want to be prepared. I said to you when we talked. Yeah, in the block. So this block that your family live in, they all live in this block, and they run the shop and everything else. I'm looking at the photos.
A couple shops,
like the village stores, basically. And these beautiful colonial buildings. I mean, beautiful.
This street.
I remember saying to you, he's like, did you check out cemeteries and stuff? Did you manage to get out to?
Those are on my list, but we just just, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and we went, I did manage to make it to,
By the way, I applied for my Colombian driver's license.
There you go.
Which was, I got, an adventure. That was a story.
Yeah. You know, there's a bunch of little stories in the betweens, all this great stuff that are like, whoa, did that just happen?
Did you get any, like, inkling of a scandal of your family leaving Colombia?
Well, go back to the Navarro side. It's like meeting with twice at home with the Navarro side. It's interesting. Even here, there is a... The Navarros are very kind of... not like the chinchillas. The chinchillas are like, yes, we are here, we're there, we're in Costa Rica, we have, you know, wherever the chinchilla family line seems to be, they are like...
There was really a vice president chinchilla in Costa Rica. Was there a president or
yes,
vice president?
Yes, I don't know if that's a relative or not, actually. Yeah. I think that's what they're alluding to. But in Barranquilla, like, that's where I'm going next. I know we have chinchillas there, so I'll be talking with Manuela when I arrive to go search chinchillas that, you know, I have direct support. But, like, the Navarro, not guarded at all, not secretive. Navarro's still... I think there's a piece to where, you know, like a little bit of a, you know, oh, it's the Navarro, the Puente Navarro. So, like, I think he, you know, gets a lot of, you know, it's iconic prestige. And so he might get a couple...
People are
crazy out of the woodwork, but
this is what I found. Yeah. You know, I've been here a few years, 11 years or so, and I'm trying to sort of, well, let's say, pump my wife's family for information about Montfort and their family and stories. They don't sit down and want to tell me about things. We'll be talking about something reasonably unrelated, and then they'll go, oh, yeah, remember the guy used to keep meat in his pockets? And you're just like, why didn't you tell me this 10 years ago? You know, because it's so interesting, so curious, so bizarre. But there are scandals, for example, you know, there are scandals that they don't want to talk about even today, because appearance is everything, family is everything, and of course you know this well from being grown up, and but the history of it, it's your identity, and you're not going to think any less of your family members for a scandal. This is generations
ago.
But these guys still live in the town.
Yeah, they still
and they still live in this bubble, which where everyone's judged and everyone's looked at. So there is a reality there. Yeah. Now these photos, you've got a lot of really nice photos. You know, but the people basically took you in as one of their own.
Oh,
they really did. And you were invited as like a celebrity to family lunches.
Oh yeah, I did with both of ours, and they did not want me to leave. And then the next thing you know, this man hands up this. This is here.
Yeah. You've got them all noted down. I'm glad.
This is Gustavo Antonio Chinchilla Martinez. And he's about he appeared right next to me, and it's like, look at us. I
mean,
it's like primos. Yeah. You know? Like, he was like, I'm so happy to have a primo, like a cool primo and
primo gringo.
Yeah, primo gringo, exactly. So like, you know, they invite, you know, my birthday is on June 25th, and there's a big the festival there on the 21st to 29th, and they're like, oh, please come back for the festival so you can meet every. They're gonna get all the chinchilla. Apparently, all the chinchillas.
They'll come to festival. Yeah. Everyone comes. Now, will you come back for these dates with your daughter? Yeah. Maybe with your mom.
Oh, this is So my daughter is. My mom's been back to Colombia.
Yeah.
With her husband, my stepfather. Yeah. Many times over the years for.
Was your stepfather his work,
he's a, no, he's Scotch. Scottish. He's a Campbell.
Okay.
My mom had a thing for Anglo boys.
Well, with Martinez, which is my father-in-law's one of his names, and with Campbell, at some point, that back of the line, there'll be some relations in common, I reckon, with you and me.
I'm sure there is. That's McCall, Lowry,
and Martinez with the river. You see, the Magdalena River, because my father-in-law was born in Gamarra Cesar, but it's just right on the Magdalena River. So the river connects. People.
Yeah. Okay. That's Manuela, and me and her, this is who I really connected with. She was a beauty. So they're all beautiful, by the way. You can tell.
Yeah.
And she was a local like beauty. She met Gabo. She was she was the local Manuela. Yeah. Before she was blind, obviously.
Yeah.
And she's the local beauty queen.
Okay.
Look at that. And
wonderful.
Then, so you know, just it was so hard to leave. Mm. It was like, you know, almost drawn to tears.
You're letting her the heart. that stress.
Yeah.
But yeah, my parents, I mean, yeah, this is something. My mom's back. My daughter, she's just going to be 19.
This is a good time to come.
She's game for it. Yeah. She's a little, you know, of course, I'm the only one who will have to, I'm the translator. But,
okay.
But we might take a family trip. Yeah, we're trying to make those plans.
Well, you could, you know, if you all came down, you'd rent a car and do it, and then it would be, you'd be liberty. But the thing is, you go to visit these distant family or close family, and they don't want to let you leave, and you won't want to leave either. Yeah. And that's the other story. But it's just one of those things, isn't it? It's one of those. But you're applying for your Colombian citizenship.
Yeah.
The consul general in Colombia, the Dixon Moya, is helping you out.
Oh yeah.
But with this kind of connections, and you know, you could send scans of these photos and stuff and the family tree. There should be no issue.
Yeah, I've already initiated the process based on his invites, by the way.
Yeah.
I've been in their offices twice. Worked with one of the officials, Paula Sanchez, in there. And I'm looking to become, you know, a dual citizen, and you know, possibly even thinking about why not finding work, moving down here, get an apartment.
The issue is Colombians now, and the government and the situation in Colombia, is they want you to come back with your knowledge. You know, you've grown up overseas and have a different perspective on life. Colombia has been very closed for many, many years. I would say since the beginning of the nation of Colombia, really. It's been an isolated country, and then subsequently by the conflict, it's been isolated and so on. They want the Colombians from outside to come back bringing a knowledge. You know, it's a globalized world, this day and age. There's a desire for this. But I mean, it's a different lifestyle. But again, you grew up with Colombians.
Yeah.
But you're on a search at the moment.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, you're 39.
Yeah.
I hope that's not midlife crisis.
Yeah. You gotta wonder, right?
Because if it's midlife, it's you're not gonna see 80.
That's why when I feel like I'm having a little bit of a meltdown at this point, I just go to Benjamin Franklin, and I go to the Transcendent, I go to Emerson and Thoreau and Gobble.
But we go through these things. I think when my father passed away some years ago, seven or eight years ago, I started researching again the Canadian roots and the Scottish roots, and now I've got this desire to go up to Oban and Scotland and see where I'm from and the island off. But these are the things I've never been. And I think it does happen. I think there is a similarity in most people's lives. And it's a search for an identity. You are from the US. You are an American with Northern Irish, with Colombian roots. And that's today's world.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's
today's world. And that's why it's so fascinating. I mean, let's close this off now. Yep. We're out of time. But let's close this off. And you're going to come back June, July, hopefully with your daughter to give her an insight into this and stuff.
Yeah.
And what would be, let's say, your aim and your hope for the next visit here?
I want to definitely really get a deeper understanding of my family story. And it's really hard to find people that have any memory right now. So it'd be more researching in the document side of things, I think. But
it's a formal side.
Yeah, and there's more chinchillas to meet that I'll have stories too that I'm kind of looking forward. I kind of want to close that sort of chapter of my life, really, so I can pass it on to my daughter. Really, it's really for her to pass on, for her. And now if I get married and have more kids, same thing. And I've done that with my my old sides. So that's this is this is to be continued. You know, this kind of.
I think you'll be coming back twice or three times in a year. Yeah. I think you're going to come back as often as you can.
I grew up a little bit of a nature boy, so I went to Leelanau School, which was like right on the Crystal River in Traverse City, Michigan, and doing real outdoorsy kind of family activity, camping, and so I want to explore the natural areas too.
Well, there's a plenty of that. I think you've got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, I think you've got
a lot on your plate. I think you've got a lot to do. But how exciting to be able to do it, and how exciting to have the will, at the hopefully the time, and of course the money, because it's not a cheap journey. Columbia is not cheap.
No, I had to pay all my bills. Yeah, I left.
You had to do your taxes and stuff. I'm just gonna hit up for them here as well. So, you know, we're all with the bags under our eyes. But let me just say that it's wonderful to be able to share a good news story about Columbia, about identity, about your personal experiences, and you feel close. I mean, the embraces given in these photographs are genuine. They're not like sort of standoffish people hugging one another. You were there. You are now part of that family, and that's, I think, phenomenal. And they too appreciate this. There you go. There you go. There's the, with Manuela, you're chatting away and the hugging, and I mean, this is quite emotive stuff. So let me just take this moment to say, you know, thank you. It's all right. Thank you to Adam and Navarro Lowry for taking his time and sharing some intensely personal insights and images and history. And keep listening, and we want to hear your next trip, and we want to hear about what happens in Barranquilla. It's going to be different up there. It's a different society and culture altogether. I will be interested to hear, you know, what you felt more akin to, because I think your genuine relatives are here, and then it sort of like say dilutes as you go up to Barranquilla. But we'll see.
We will see.
This is me signing off with Adam Navarro Lowry here, episode 228 of Columbia Calling. Thank you so much for listening. I love feedback. ColumbiaCalling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Same place. Do throw some money at the crowdfunding campaign that I interviewed last week at for Carlos Villalón. It's an excellent book. The photos are incredibly powerful and should end up being, you know, let's say compulsory reading for a lot of places. So that's me for today. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.